Podcast.
The Council's Environment Development Infrastructure Committee recently considered a report about electric vehicle charging points. Council's steadily been adding to the network of charging points and is using all the available funding it can bid for to add to these. The committee considered proposals for adding to that network and agreed to go out to consultation with the public on where those will be. That'll happen in the new year, but ahead of that, I'm speaking to Mark Holder and Victoria Weir from our Roads and Infrastructure team, talking about what the plans are for the rollout of that network. So with me today, I've got Victoria Weir, our project officer, and Mark Holder, project manager from our Roads and Infrastructure Service, and both are involved in the rollout of electric charging points, which is big issue, I suppose, coming out of COP26 and real focus on greener ways to travel. How we support the increase in electric vehicles is a really topical issue. So, Victoria, maybe come to you first and maybe just give an overview of what we've got already in terms of access to charging points and things across Argyll and Bute.
Of course, good morning. So at the moment, we currently have 28 public chargers across Argyll and Bute, with the majority being rapid chargers, which is great because they take roughly about an hour to charge a car, an EV car, excuse me. We then drop down to fast chargers, and we've got 12 of them across Argyll and Bute, and they take roughly about 2 to 3 hours, just depending on the car battery and whatnot. But in addition to that, we've also got chargers in council offices and depots, and that is supporting the transition that we have, that we're making from council fleet to EV cars. We've recently replaced over 50 of our small vehicles with EV or plug-in vehicles, and this has been supported by new chargers at the locations in Oban, Helensburgh, Tobermory and Rothsay. So we're really starting to expand the network right across the area.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to have that access to our own vehicles like that. I know I had to travel recently and we took one of the hybrid vehicles, which was fantastic, and people may see them about with all the green logos badged up on them, so they're quite visible if you see them out and about. But I know you're working on plans to expand on that network, because I think I might say, you know, a lot of what we've got is sort of key strategic transport points so far. So what are you looking at on expanding that that range of charging points?
Yeah, work so far to date, we've developed criteria which can be applied across the council's roads, public car parks, marine and air sites. Doing this has given us a list of about 55 new sites which we'll be able to deliver on should funding arise from Transport Scotland, Scottish Government. The development plans are split into sort of two categories. Theme one is charging on the move, and theme two is destination charging. Charging on the move provides for rapid chargers, which we've mentioned briefly, and should see one of these every 30 or so minutes of driving in either direction across the network, across the road network. Destination charging, this will provide fast chargers, will primarily be located in council off street car parks across the area. In terms of numbers, we have different ratios to be applied depending on the population size of each town. And in terms of tangible outcomes this year, we're actually looking to deliver 8 sites, and that's via funding from Hitrans and another site via Transport Scotland funding. Other funding that we have options of to deliver council sites are at Argyll House in Dunoon, and additional charges, as I've mentioned before, up at Helensburgh, at the Helensburgh Lomond Civic Centre and Dunoon Grammar School, which is something new because we've not yet gone into the school estates. So that's quite exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's interesting that there's rapid chargers and fast chargers, and it's really helpful to you explaining that, because I think some of us might think that those words are interchangeable, but the rapid are the really fast ones. Is there a reason why they're not all rapid chargers? Why some are the slightly slower, so fast charging points? Why there's a balance of those?
It's just dependent on users in each area. For example, if you are in Oban and you've popped into the town to get shopping, go to a dentist, whatever it may be, you want to be able to plug in your charger, get a quick burst so that 1 hour or so charge, and with confidence come back and know that your car is going to have a decent charge there. However, if you're maybe leaving your car all day and you don't need it until later on, you can leave it on a slow charger, sorry, come back to it, knowing that it's taken most of the day to charge because you've left it on such a charger, and that because you've not needed it, you've not needed access to it all day, so there's no need for you to sit at a rapid charger blocking that bay all day. In addition to that, we've then got charges that are applied if you're sitting in a bay. So if you walk away and leave it all day, you're actually going to incur overstay charges and whatnot. But yeah, it's all to do with how people use the chargers in each area. That's why we've got destination charging as a theme one and so on. So yeah, it's all to do with that behavior, user behavior, if you like.
Yeah, so it's
I call the rapid charging. It's like if you think about it in the traditional sort of wet fuel way. So, the idea is if you have an electric car, you charge at home and you leave with it charged. So we want our rapid chargers every half hour on the network, and it's kind of like filling up your car before a long drive, and then you stop somewhere for a coffee. It's like topping up with a tenner or £20 or something, just a quick boost to kind of help you on your way. Whereas the destination charging is, as Antonio says, it's more like if you're going to be out for lunch or at the pictures or something like that. So it's to kind of match into the way that people use it.
Yeah, and really giving confidence that people aren't going to get caught short with it as
Exactly.
well, in terms of that distance between sighting them. But I mean, undoubtedly there's challenges in sighting the charging points and getting that network. What are some of the challenges you deal with, Mark?
So, in terms of the actual physical implementation and installation of these, some of our colleagues, our more technically minded colleagues that deal with this, but there are questions, around electricity supply and grid capacity is the main question, and then the cost that arises from that if you need to upgrade the infrastructure, and that can be, it could kind of be how long's a piece of string. But I think that gives rise to, from the sort of strategy perspective, there's quite a fundamental question in terms of whether it should be local authorities that provide these, or this mechanism of fuel, or should it be the private sector? But I think that it's likely, particularly in a rural area like Argyll and Bute, where there may be some quite significant infrastructure costs in some of our more rural areas, our extremely remote areas, to put these in. There is that question about equity, and making sure that nobody's left behind, or that every community has access to these things, or that they are placed in accessible locations. So I think that's why it's likely to be in Argyll and Bute, certainly for the rollout of the 55 sites that we have, that it will be publicly funded or publicly subsidised, because I just don't think it would work otherwise for the private sector. Whereas we might find in other local authority areas or other parts of the country that there is a greater rollout of private sector charters because it's more commercially viable. So yeah, the main barrier for us is kind of technical infrastructure considerations, and then how they feed into cost implications.
Yeah, because I mean, I know you sometimes we get calls for them to be in key rural locations, and sometimes it's just not feasible at this point in time. And I mean, in other areas, I know we probably see more of it in either private car parks or hotels or even service stations and things. They're getting chargers. Probably more prevalent than here, but I mean, we're not the only providers, are they? I think I know CalMAC for one have them at ports. There's probably others, but I suspect we're probably the predominant provider of charging points across that strategic network to make sure people travelling across the area have got those key stopping off points.
Yeah, and one of the things that I'm particularly keen on, or that we're all particularly keen on, is that keep using this phrase as in how it relates to the network of public roads. So these should be entirely publicly accessible. So if you access a charger in Helensburgh or Kilpeds or Mull or Col, it should be in the same way. So while there may be little dots of private sector provision, how does that work in terms of, if it's in a hotel car park, do you need to buy a meal before you can use the charger? Whereas what we want to provide is just that, a public network which is the same and is accessible for everybody and doesn't come with any restrictions or limitations or additional barriers to using them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's people need to have that confidence, don't they? And if they're buying an electric vehicle, that they're going to have that access, as you say, with no strings attached, essentially, of how you can get to them. But I'm sure, I mean, we know Argyll and Bute is a massive area. All of that infrastructure of electric charging points is going to be quite dispersed. Maintenance must be challenging in itself of trying to keep on top of that.
One of the main challenges, you hear terms like user anxiety or driver anxiety, and a part of that is about the location of these and the confidence that you'll be able to charge on the journey. But I think it would be fair to say that across the country there are questions of reliability over some of the chargers, and that then impacts kind of driver confidence as well. So there's quite a bit of unpicking to do to the maintenance arrangements. Our chargers are covered by warranties and statutory annual checks. There can be different types of faults depending on the sort of nature of them, and some of them can be reset remotely by, like, every charger is managed by a company called Swarco, who provide the back office service for Transport Scotland, and it's through them that they administer the payments and stuff for us. It used to be ChargePlace Scotland. Some of these faults can be corrected remotely. Some faults need to be attended to by an engineer. The kind of it's not dissimilar, Pippa, to street lights. Although I don't know if any of my technical colleagues that might listen to this may cringe when I say that, but it's not dissimilar in the sense that, there's going to be faults within the actual charger itself, the part which is basically poking out the ground, and that would be for the maintenance company or the contract. But then there may also be faults with the power supply, or the power to the charger. So can be a wee bit of a, the different fa the c the correct fault needs to be identified first and then addressed. So while that does work in the background, we are conscious that it's not the clearest process in the world for members of the public to understand. So, alongside the kind of strategy development and the long list, which has been the main focus of our work in the past wee while, we do have some online customer resources and whatever. One of the things that we want to provide a wee bit more clarity about is just the kind of fault reporting process, or not the fault reporting process, the fault attending to process and the kind of different timescales around that. And while the existing network is managed by different maintenance contracts, it's one for a future part of the strategy to think about how we manage and maintain this group of chargers in the longer term, and what's the best and most economical way to do that, whether it's something which can be picked up internally through some of our electrically qualified staff or whichever option provides the best value and sort of reliability for that. So I suppose the answer to that question is people report faults to ChargePlace Scotland, and we do deal with them, but it's not maybe just quite as straightforward as we would like or as people might think.
Yeah, so fair to say there's sort of lots of work going on in the background, and I don't think it's just Argyll and Bute, is it? It's nationally, just to sort of streamline that and make sure that any faults are dealt with in a sort of quick and slicker way as possible, for all the reasons we've said already, and making sure people have got confidence they're going to be able to, they're not going to get somewhere and not be able to recharge their vehicle.
I think it's important to make it clear that if someone arrives at a charge point and it's faulty, at each charge station there's contact details for Charge Place Scotland, regardless of whether it's in Argyll and Bute or Glasgow or whatever, because they are the national back office support system. So the confidence can always be there that they can contact CPS and report that fault. I think it then becomes a little bit of a mixed bag as to then identifying where the responsibility lies. Is it us or is it CPS? You know, is it a warranty issue or is it a fault with actually the electricity, and therefore we've got to get SSEN or whatnot involved? So the user can definitely have confidence. They just report it to CPS and then it's picked up and actioned in the background. In each of our charge points, we've also got a link to a web page, our Argyll and Bute Council web page, where there's lots of FAQs, and they will find lots of information there about various things, but also if they find a fault and what they can do. So confidence should be there if a user arrives at the machine and there's an issue. And then from the back of that, they can then look to see, okay, where's the next charger in relation to where I am? And that's one of the reasons we want to be able to place a charger every sort of 25 to 35 minutes, because we want to have that confidence that if you arrive and the charger doesn't work, that you're okay, you're going to get to the next charge point, and we really need to make sure that users, you know, are comfortable and have that confidence in our network.
Absolutely, and I suppose there's a big plea to anybody who comes across one and does find a fault, is please do take the time to let us know, because that way we can make sure it's fixed for
report it
for the next person. So yeah, absolutely, it's sort of key for that. And Mark, I mean, I'm sure some people will say, you know, do more, do it quicker. You know, what's the response to that?
I'm very pleased with the work which we've done over the past few months. I think the work which has been done to develop the existing network in the past has been excellent. It's one of these kind of really background, sort of quietly successful things that the council has done, Pippa, without really sort of shouting about it, which is like a lot of the things that we do. And there's a logic to where the chargers are. But, you know, as this kind of ramps up, we need to have a sort of publicly accessible and transparent and bought into the strategy. And it can all be retrospectively applied to where the chargers are at the moment as well. I think in terms of how we move forward and the sort of scalability of it, I suppose the bottom line is it's down to money, in that the installation so far have been entirely externally funded. About £700,000 from Transport Scotland for 28 chargers. So we've developed this list, which excuse me, I'm really happy with. I think it provides for, if this list can be delivered on it, it will provide for a really good overall coverage across the council area. But we don't know at this point in time to what extent we'll be able to, deliver on the 55 sites being identified, because we don't know what our funding allocation will be in the future. We are hoping that there will be some certainty around that towards the end of the financial year, and that we might have funding allocated over a 3 to 5 year period, which would be really helpful in allowing us to plan for the longer term. That being said, we do have this public plan now, which is kind of longer term, and it is based on logic and whatever. our first priority needs to be to fill in the gaps in the network and ensure that there is that even spread of provision across all communities, or all communities have fair access to it. Once the gaps are filled, we intend to monitor the use of the charters themselves in terms of, it's quite good in the back office system, you know, you can see the power consumption and user sessions from each individual charter, so immediately you can know which charters are well used and which are not. What we also want to do, this is something that gets some support from our colleagues in the customer service and IT teams, just to find the best way to do it, but what we want is some sort of mechanism where, you know, if you pull up to use a charger in your electric car and someone else is using it, there's some sort of text system or online form or something where you can let us know that, and you call that the abandonment rate. You know, so between the evidence then that we have of the usage of individual chargers and the evidence that we have of people that have gone to use them and been unable to, that should give us really powerful data to understand that such and such a location therefore merits additional chargers versus another location which may not. And I think, in my opinion, that is the better way to spend public money, which is based on evidence of need, rather than a more sort of speculative build it and they will come approach. And to kind of facilitate or enable that, what we will try and do, as far as is reasonably practical, a part of the consideration for these 55 sites that we've identified is, do they have the opportunity to expand there? And what can we do in terms of the infrastructure when we put in the first one, you know, additional ducting and cabling and plinths and whatever, to make it then easier and quicker to put in newer ones or to expand on those specific sites when the evidence merits that expansion.
Yeah, so I mean that sort of evidence base of where we might need to expand, and I suppose that's going to be an ongoing thing as more people consider buying these types of vehicles, you will want to keep on top of what the usage is and in key sites. So, you know, as you're rolling that out, what are the sites that are getting priorities, and what will it look like when, you know, we've managed to do all the 55 additional sites? What kind of coverage will that give us across the area?
I think one of the important things about that is that we will need to prioritise these sites, of course. And what we're going to do is prioritise them in a sort of what I've called an out-to-in way, where so we have a kind of ratio for the second theme for towns of 1,000 to 2,000 people, where we have at least one in a council off-street car park, and then there's a, it's 25% for towns of 2,000 to 5,000, 50% for towns of 5,000 to 10,000, and all car parks for towns over 10,000. That's only Helensburgh for us, but we're going to do it kind of from bottom to top or out to end. So if you take somewhere like Helensburgh, for example, it is reasonably well covered already with a bank of charters that appear, albeit it's been relocated as part of the waterfront project. So rather than pushing forward with installing charters and all the other car parks in Helensburgh first, what we're going to look to do is do the kind of peripheral towns and work our way in. So Cardross, Rosneath, Gaelic Head, just to make sure that there is that sort of overall kind of coverage. So yeah, there's a big long list, and for anybody that is interested in it, we've got it going up to the EDI committee in a report which will be published just next week. So it'll be there, and one of the things that Victoria has been doing is working with her colleagues on the GIS team just to be able to map this, which I think will be really powerful, and that's a resource that we want to get on the council website, you know, with different layers and whatever, where you can click on it and see the what's existing, what's proposed, what's fast, what's rapid, and whatever. So, I mean, I don't know, Pippa, if it's maybe too much detail for this to, I don't think we'd want to run through every single individual site which has been identified, but I think what it'll look like is that, or the criteria is, towns with a different population, plus towns which have a slightly smaller resident population than 1,000, but which are known tourist hotspots, plus any sites that are about half an hour's drive on the network of public roads.
So basically, it will mean that we've got at least one charger in every town, and that sort of half hour spread across the whole network. So I think what you mentioned, that EDI, that's the Environment Development and Infrastructure Committee. So by the time we put this up, that will probably be published if people want to see the sort of details of the approach you're describing. And I think that will be really useful then for people to be able to see sort of current sites and planned sites if they're wondering if their area is going to be covered. But I think what you were describing is an important point of, we will make sure we're prioritizing in towns that haven't got a charger before we add more chargers to somewhere that's already got them, just to try and get the spread of coverage first before we add to the capacity. Is that right?
Yes.
I think it's, sorry,
Excellent.
I'm
Go for it,
sorry.
Victoria.
I was going to say, I think it's really important that we do it in the way that Mark set out. Instead of going biggest to smallest, we're going from the smaller areas because we live in a rural setting, but we don't want those that live maybe out with our larger towns to feel that they are not getting that resource as well. And that's why it was sort of flipped, because originally when we had started to develop this, we thought, okay, we'll start building like little hubs, if you like, in Dunoon and Helensburgh, Lochgilphead. And then we thought, well, what about the people that are out with these areas? What provision have they got? So I think it's good that working through the process, we've identified we need to flip it on its head and start with the smaller areas and build our way back up again.
No, I think that's a good point. So it will give that equity of access across the whole area for people who want to adopt those that sort of a greener fuel for travel, which is this is such a growing area, and the exponential growth in people choosing these kind of vehicles is massive. So I think giving people the confidence to make those choices will be is so important, and being able to see what's being planned and what's coming will help inform those choices. So I think that's a really important point, and we all know too well just how we need to flex to meet the needs of rural areas, which is so important in a place like Argyll and Bute. So if people want to see, they can check out the report that sort of sets out the criteria and what that'll look like, and but then in due course we'll get all of those maps and things so they can see it on the website for themselves as to where they're going to go. And you said eight more that people can look forward to seeing this year. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
So that's, and when we say this year, we mean by our financial year. So is that right? By sort of March next year?
It might not be exactly by March next year. It's quite ironic with the funding that we're using at the moment. It's historical funding from Europe, and the project itself is called Faster Project. It's starting to pick up momentum now, but it's dragged its heels a little bit just while sort of all the detail was worked out. So we hope to be in areas this financial year, but it won't be complete by the end of March. Certainly not.
Okay.
I think one of the kind of key things around this, just in terms of, we have this list, it's theoretical at this point in time, and there may be some areas which on a map look great, but there is some significant or insurmountable infrastructure barrier or cost barrier. But the funding landscape's really complicated as well. There's wee bit, we've talked about Transport Scotland, which we expect, through the Scottish Government to be our main provider of funding for this, but there's wee bits of funding everywhere else as well, and every one comes with slightly different criteria, both for its application and its reporting on and whatever. So another thing for us to do will be to map sites to funding opportunities to timescales to, just make that all match up and to get the best, to leave her in the best. Or sorry, to match the kind of funding opportunities to the sites and make sure that we lever in as much finance as possible. The particular schemes that we're talking about this year are actually delivered through HiTrans as part of a sort of cross-regional thing, which includes Western Isles, Highland, and through some sort of partnership with a transport agency in Northern Ireland as well. So rather than the kind of traditional model for things like this would have been that they would have allocated the funding directly to the council, then we would have delivered it. It's a slightly different model, and I think the reason that it's taken a wee bit of time just to pull it all together is because they're trying to do a single procurement across the entire region, because that is the terms of the European funding that they have access to. So I think it's maybe important to point out that there's often work going on in the background, and there's a lot of paperwork and discussion around just how we get these funds and how we spend them.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, hopefully people have got a sense of just some of the complexities that go behind the decisions of where we put these and which ones come first. But hopefully if people are interested in and they see that report, or they go and look at the sort of maps of what the vision is for Argyll and Bute, they'll get a sense of the overall coverage that we're aiming for, and making sure there is that equity of access. And hopefully we will see more people taking up the opportunity then to choose a green option when they're replacing their vehicles. So thank you both for that, and giving a sort of a richer picture of what's involved in that, and people will be able to find out a lot more information on our website. So thank you. So big plans for to expand the network, just make it easier for people to choose electric vehicles in Argyll and Bute. Look out for the consultation in the new year. You can go to our website and sign up for the Keep in the Loop alerts that will highlight when these consultations come out, and let us know what you think. Thank you.
Hippos Podcast.